It was an interesting time in as much that I was getting to my mid-20s at that stage, and I thought I've got to do something other than surf lifesaving, although swimming is a year-round event anyway, and I was thinking of taking up golf. And at that point of time, not knowing many clubs around and living in Bigton, I thought about joining Royal Fremantle. And before I had a chance to take that opportunity, I saw it advertised that there's going to be a meeting in the Applecross Community Hall down near the Raffles Hotel, what was the Raffles Hotel at the time, to discuss and consider the joining or the creation of a new club. Location to be determined and name to be determined, one thing or another. So I turned up at the meeting, and the meeting, in fact, was quite packed out. That little hall was very, very full, and there was a lot of interesting discussion that went on. So that then stirred the imagination a bit and the desire to probably be a part of a new venture instead of joining Fremantle, which was very far from Bigton, of course. And I went through the process, and it was a few months later that they then had a second meeting. That they then saying, well, we've had a first meeting, we've had a second meeting, we now really got to get serious about this and find out how many people would actually join should it go ahead. I think a reasonable number of people indicated that that would be the case. And I was one of them at the time, and they decided that at that stage that we'd need to pay a fee to show our true commitment to the ongoing venture. Time went by, and of course it takes a little time before then the allocation and work started on the club. And it's hard to believe that this club, in those days, there wasn't a house for probably 2 kilometres or 3 kilometres. It was all certainly bush. Out in the bush, and it's just an amazing thought to think that...
Hard to visualise a golf club being here.
That God created, and then you have a look now, and of course you just can't believe that happened.
Well, I can remember when my father asked, he must have seen something in the local paper or something via the city of Melville, or even, I think it could be Shire of Melville at the time, regarding the setting up of the Melville Glades Golf Club. He asked me if I wanted to join, and I said, oh, well, yes, why not?
How old were you at the time?
I would have been 14, I think.
3 lots of fees were played before we played on the course. Bulldozers had cleared the bush on the fairways. We spent many weekends clearing the small roots in the mess on the fairways. At the end of the day, we shared a drink. It was a good way to meet new members and form friendships. Cyril Wilde was contracted to build the clubhouse. Fred Helvers was the managing secretary. Richard Brain was the club professional golfer. Ted Doggett was the greenkeeper. On opening day, the course of the greens were marvellous. The fairways had a good covering of grass. However, any ball hit off the fairway was a lost cause. My partner on that day was a Scotsman, whose name I cannot recall, but halfway through the second nine, his mate asked him how he was going. I'll never forget his soft Scottish accent as he explained, "How am I bloody well going? I've lost 4 balls, and if I lose another, I'm going home."
The most interesting to me was the dinner dances. If you didn't book in as soon as they opened the books, you never got in because everybody came. The champagne breakfasts, yes. And the comradeship in the champagne breakfasts. We used to run putting here on a Friday night. All those sort of things. We're involved with the personnel. You know, all your friends and that are there. It's great now you get to this stage of your career, or whatever you like to call it, to be able to look back on all those things.
A story about Ev and he married a woman called Maureen. They used to play on the Sun Nation mixed games, and he was playing one day in this mixed gruesomes. As they were going around, Kangaroo was on the job, and it was on the job for quite a while because they spotted it on several occasions, as you do when you go around the course. And Ev, she turned around and she said, "Ev, you know what your problem is? You're not eating enough grass." True story, that way. The other guy that I recall well was a chap, not that I had a lot to do with him, but Laurie Johnson. He was one of our captains, and Laurie was a terrific guy. He was an electrical contractor, and he had the famous thing on his vehicles, "You ring me and I'll wire you." Well, later he lost his leg through some illness, lost one of his legs, but he still battled on with golf, and he bought himself a golf cart, which he called the Great White Fish Finger. You see, instead of the Great White Shark, it was a Great White Fish Finger. He had it painted on the buggy. But he used to take this buggy around to wherever he was playing golf, and he even played pennants. He went to all that trouble, and he was my captain in outer suburban pennants. No, he was a character, and whenever he got up on the mic, he had something useful to say.
Because the Novel Glades at the time was a very athletic, long course that the professionals found quite demanding, do you
think? They certainly did, and I think a lot of them used to avoid it.
Yes.
Playing at the club because it was so difficult.
Mm.
But they were probably going back to the days when the fairways were very narrow too.
That's true.
Of course, they've spread a hell of a lot. Mm-hmm. They were the days too when if you went into the bush, you were lucky to find the ball.
Mm.
Now that all the undergrowth's been slashed out.
Do you remember the wildflowers, the kangaroo paws?
I remember all that sort of thing, yes. And the bird life, blue wrens and robin redbreasts.
Absolutely.
And different sorts of orchids growing, kangaroo paws everywhere. The kangaroos, and in those days, predominantly the kangaroos had a white markings on their forehead, which they still do today.
Yes.
And I should imagine it's been passed down through the generations.
Yeah.
Snakes as well, Paul. You mentioned Jeff Bennett.
Yes.
I became very good friends with Jeff, and we always played on that Thursday comp as well.
Yep.
And one story about him, he always used to say that the sprigs on his golf shoes, he used to always change on the tee from his normal shoes to his golf shoes. Anyway, one Thursday we got down there to the tee, and Jeff had left his golf shoes at home. So he raced back up to the big bin in the locker room and scrummaged around. He found, you know, two shoes, same brand, right size, and he put them on, and we went down the first. And at the end of the first, he thought something's wrong there, and he had a look down. He had two left foot shoes on.
I suppose the only antidote was Max Hannah fishing out an anchor out of Swan River and hanging them over my locker, and that's been there for ever and a day until they moved it out.
As a group, you got on very well in the Spring Bar. Do you remember the Spring Bar?
Tremendous, yes. Tremendous camaraderie here in the initial years.
And do you have any personal highlights? Do you all laugh at the Melville Glades? I know you've won many, many events.
I did character. Win the Founders Cup. I was fortunate to win the foursomes and a couple of championships, and I suppose the highlight would be holing out in every par three. That's six holes in my life, and four of them here.
I was on the course committee under Les Friday for 2 years, and then he resigned or left. And I took over as course director, and I was on that for 6 years. Hard years.
Yes, they were hard years.
Yeah. Yeah, in the winter here, the golf course was just a mud heap. The fairways were just a mud heap. And we took a big gamble with changing over to a wintergreen coach. Because we just had the wild coach in here, and during the winter months that just died off. And I consulted Nick Bell, who was I think he's still running a big business in turf management, and he suggested we try poisoning the wild coach and putting in the winter green coach. And then I had a Kai lobby come through at about 6 months into the chair, and headed by Des Shave and I forget the other guy, he was a Quinana golfer. They hit us with a Kai lobby, gave us, I think, 6 months if it didn't improve. They were going to push to have Kai Kui playing right around the golf
course. Des Shave standing up at that meeting saying, let's grow grass here.
Well, I still remember another member in the Sprig Bar, Georgie Wakeland, who
is.
He nicknamed me Grassy. But we proceeded to plant the wintergreen coach, and from there on in, the story's there now. The fairways are probably the best we've ever seen.
Yes.
Well, I did mention the Sprig Bar, which obviously everyone would have talked about. The Sprig Bar was the place to be.
We exchanged side bets for if nothing else.
Yeah, that's right. And there was one time the course was washed out, and I think it was a Saturday, and everyone came in the Sprig Bar, and you would have had nearly 100 people in the Sprig Bar. And this was after about playing golf for about an hour.
Mm.
And everyone was yahooing, drinking and that. And Ken Marsh, he wheeled in the old piano we had in the lounge, and then it was a honky-tonk Sprig Bar.
What do you see as being the strengths of the Melville Glades, and what about its future? Do you have any comments on that?
I think your strength has always been that it's been more of a working man's club. We built up a lot of camaraderie, fellowship in those early days. To me, and it's only my opinion, a lot of that came from the Sprig Bar area. And I think the Sprig Bar area in those days was a very important hub of the club for a number of reasons. One, I think one of the main ones would be the fact that politically it was a strong group there, and I think they had a fair bit of sway in what went on in the club. I still miss that.
Yes,
that Sprig Bar today, and I think we lost a little bit of the atmosphere of the club when that Sprig Bar disappeared.
I don't know whether anyone's mentioned Tommy Dips, who organised the Binning Up Masters, and that was always 16 members of the golf club with Andrew Simpson, and that went on for 20 years.
Mm.
That was brilliant comradeship with all those members, and a lot of laughs. And
it's interesting hearing the different perspectives of the various foundation members, looking at the social aspect of the club as well as the playing membership.
Mm. We had the best chef ever, and that was Eddie Washnett. And we ate like kings down there. Initially, I was the master of arms or master of the bar, and I'd bring down all the wine. We never went without. Probably the 20th one we played was the best one. We hired the youth camp site down in Binningup, and that time it could sleep 70 people, 16 into 70. There was plenty of room, but the best part about it was afterwards we all finished golf and we were all together, whereas previously we had two houses. That would have been the best. I organised 16 medallions, which we presented round the neck, the whole lot, their name, the 2015 Binning Up Masters. Everyone had a green one and a bronze medallion. Tommy Dix got a red ribbon with a gold medallion because he was the initial starter. But that weekend really did excel.
The club itself also has changed. There's about 900 members or so here today compared to about 200 or 300. You should have knew everybody. Today it's not quite the same. And, of course, the replacement clubhouse was completed in 2001. What's been the strength, do you think, of the Melville Glades Golf Club? And does it have a future?
I think so. The club's really got to get the middle-aged 30 to 40-year-old members to get more involved with the club. How we do it, I don't know. There's a lot of members who really, that they socialise inside, but basically you hardly know anyone as an older member now. Mm-hmm. There's just a certain group of, say, 40 or 50 people who you know consistently. I think somehow or other, maybe, for the board or whatever, we've got to get new blood. And there's a lot of smart young kids out there.
meaning the 35, 40-year-olds.
Well, you're both great examples of the benefit of the membership of the Melbourne Glades Golf Club, and I want to thank you both for sharing these recollections, both Lance and Russell, and for taking the time and effort to talk to us. And once again, congratulations for achieving that 50 years of membership.
We're, you know, really chuffed about being here for that length of time. I know I'm speaking for Lance too, that we're very proud of the fact that we've lasted 50 years. And it's something we'll never forget.